Let us wait in time for the time of the greatest saint in relationship to chanting the holy name lived. Was in the 15th century. Someone who was born in a Muslim family and who was despised by the Hindu society and feared and dreaded, took to the chanting of the holy name, to the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. The Muslims also know what is called dhikr, that is the constant repetition of Allah's name, Al-Rahim, Rahim. 99 such words are there in our names. But Haridas Thakur, although born in the Muslim community, chanted the Hare Krishna Mantra. And this created a very discouraging situation. The Muslims did not like that he chanted Hare Krishna and excommunicated him. And the Hindus did not like that Haridas Thakur came from a Muslim background and also didn't accept him in their community. He was, so to say, in spiritual nobody's land when he became attentive to Mahaprabhu's appearance and chanted the holy name and was accepted as the greatest saint by the Brahmin Advaita Acharya. Once Advaita Acharya celebrated a festival where he honored the Pitris, his exalted ancestors. And at the end, there was the distribution of an opulent meal. Now, in India, you have a lot about hierarchy, who gets first the honor. And the honor was supposed to be given to the brahmanas of Shantipur, the exalted knowers of the Vedic scriptures. But Advaita Acharya came forward, a skinny man, Haridas, and said, "You must take the first plate." The brahmanas were incensed. Why he's from a Muslim background. We should be given the first place. And Advaita Acharya said, "The power of Haridas is so great that I will demonstrate it now." And he took a pile of dry wood, placed it in the middle of the brahmanas and said, "If you can ignite this wood, just by chanting your mantras, you will show your potency." So the brahmanas knew that there was the Agnisara mantra, a mantra which would invoke Agni, the god of fire. And they chanted this mantra. But no matter how much they tried, the fire would not burn. Then Advaita requested with tears in his eyes Haridas to come forward. Haridas said, I never ignite wood with mantras. I am not into these things. And Haridas finally chanted, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare." When he ended this mantra, fire! Burst forth from the wood.
Everyone was shocked. This was too much. There was fire burning.
And Advaitacharya only smiled and said, "This is the power of a pure devotee. The Lord will do all his wonderful things if he wishes to glorify his devotee." Well, the Brahmana said, "TK, TK, TK, he may eat first." But generally, he was a disturbance to the conventions of society. The Muslim ruler, local district magistrate, the Qazi, heard of Haridas. He heard how he was often seen at the banks of the Ganga dancing and chanting in ecstasy the holy name. And he feared that Haridas sent a bad example. It was a bad precedence case to the other Muslims. What if they would follow his example? This would be the end of the foreign rule in Bengal. So the Qazi ordered his arrest. The henchmen went to Haridas, put iron chains over him and over his arms, and brought him to the prison. The prisoners in the prisons were mostly Hindus. In the modern language we would say political prisoners. And when they heard that the great saint had been brought to the prison, they all came to the doors of their cells because they knew of the powerful blessings of a saint. They were there and they called out from the doors of their prisons, "Oh, great saint, bless us. It is so terrible here. We have not seen our family since long, and we are not eating proper food, and there's so many diseases are here." Haridas looked at them and he told them the best situation is in the jail. This was not to the liking or the expectations of the prisoners. And they said, "What? We hoped an early release. We hope you will bless us." And Haridas said, "And now you have ordered us to stay here. Blessed us to stay here." And they were shocked. Then Haridas explained to them, "I did not say you should remain in prison. I said this state in which you are is most favorable, because now you can look earnestly for shelter of Krishna. Chant and you are free from the alluring desires for material sense gratification. Please don't be troubled for a moment. Today or in a few days you will be released from jail. But don't forget that outside is the big jail, the entanglement of material life. Therefore, focus on the chanting of the holy name." The hearing, the prisoners were very grateful. Then the day came where Haridas was to be judged. He was brought to the Nabab. This is like a king. And then the Qazi, who had ordered his imprisonment, was also there. The Nabab immediately could recognize the greatness of Haridas. Don't we all know this? When a truly saintly devotee enters through the door, feel something upon first seeing him. Isn't it, Mahabharata? In your service, I think you see many great souls who come in. The moment we see them, we feel something like, I don't know how to say it, a joyful excitement in our heart. Isn't it, Buddha Bhavana? We can feel that. Some feeling like this. So when Haridas was brought in chains before the king, he was effulgent. Not the king, Haridas. And the king felt this effect and was very respectful. He said, Haridas, you are from a high family, but why do you live like a low-born Hindu? Why have you abandoned your pure native religion? Haridas smiled and he said, this is an example of illusion, my dear king. There are no two gods. God of the Hindus, the God of the Muslims, and the God of the Muslims, and the God of the Christians, and the Hindus. God is one. It is the same God who is present in every religion. He is the non-dual absolute truth. It is simply the name that differs. But on the absolute plane, there's no difference. And then Haridas Thakur immediately and very, very precisely addressed the issue in front. He said, one and the same God sits in the heart of every living being and engages everyone in his service in different ways. We all are inspired by the same Lord who gives us from within directions how to worship. The living being has no independence in such matters. Sometimes people ask us, why do you worship Krishna? Why are you not worshipping the law and according to the local tradition, Christianity? Why not? And a good answer would be following in the footsteps of Haridas Thakur. Well, the same Lord inspires everyone in the heart to worship him in the particular way he feels attracted to. So I became inspired by the Lord to worship in this way. When the king heard this, he became angry and he demanded, you must chant the names of God as they are found in your native religion. Stop practicing the religion of other people. If you don't, you will face severe punishment. And severe punishment at that time meant things like death penalty, or a small penalty would be to just cut a few fingers from your hand, or the whole hand, or the arm, and then dunk the wound into boiling oil so that the wounds would close by burning. And so on. This, it meant something. It was not some, you know, one day you have to not take sweets or so. It was severe punishment. And Haridas Thakur then answered with conviction. And here you will see what the ideal, which we will never ever be able to imitate, of forbearance and tolerance means. You may cut my body to pieces. How many pieces can you cut in one body? I have once counted 1,300 32 pieces. And my life may leave the body, but I will never, ever abandon the holy name, which my tongue will ever continue to chant. It was not, if we say such a word, everyone will say, really? I brought a whole knife. Let's see. I will just bring it very closely to your eye now. I'm sorry, we are from Germany. We are a little bit drastic. What should we do with this animal? And the Qazi said, let him be beaten with a whip on 22 marketplaces, then we will see. Haridas was brought immediately to the first street. It was full with people who, I think it was the sabji market, the vegetable market, and the heavy guards came, muscular guards, and they brought their whips, who were like sticks, with them. Everyone knew what this would mean. You could only survive two beatings on two marketplaces. This was done in the army in old times, and people would come after the flogging, it's also called, into the military lazarette, and they would have one more day to live and then die from their wounds. So the people, they went and they said, don't do this. Don't start even. We will give you all our gold and our possessions, dear guards. Stop it. But the guards said, order from above. And then others said, take us instead. He's a saint. Don't do this to him. But the guards pushed all the people aside. They took the chatter away from Haridas Thakur's back. And the first beat came. Haridas Thakur's body shook because of it. But he did not cry. He didn't speak a word. The next beatings came. I will spare you the details. Strangely enough, although the guards were beating harder and harder, not even the smallest wound appeared on Haridas. He smiled. He was pushed forward and beaten, but he just did not feel, apparently felt any pain. Finally, on this 22nd marketplace, the guards just said, if you are not to be punished, if you cannot be punished, we will suffer the same punishment which was meted out to you. Haridas innocently turned around. Really? Sorry, I've given you troubles here. And he fell down and became as if lifeless. The guards were relieved. They tried to lift him up, but they found out he was very heavy. They could not lift him because he was in ecstatic trance of Krishna consciousness. The Lord had entered his body, and at that time a great soul becomes, and you can't move him, you can't carry him. But after some time this went away, and the guards carried him to the king's palace and threw him before the door. And the king said, what should be done with him? Then he said, bury him. Now this is a Muslim tradition that people are buried. But the Qazi
objected. No, no, he doesn't deserve this proper burial. Burn him like a low-class Hindu. The Hindus heard this and objected. No, 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 he's not one of us. He's something. Then the Kazi said, like garbage which is thrown into the Ganga. It was not an environmental friendly Kazi, as you see. This person who is lower than garbage should be thrown into the Ganga. Again, he could not be lifted because Krishna had entered the body, but after some time, the Lord allowed that Haridas Thakur was thrown to the Ganga. His body drifted down the waves of the Ganga, and when it came to Huliya, Haridas Thakur came out of his ecstatic trance and smiled and chanted Hare Krishna, and was brought and crawled out the Ganga on the beach. Then the king, the Nawab, and the king Kazi heard about this. They recognized he's most probably a great peer. Peer means a Sufi saint. And they did no longer try to harm him. Haridas Thakur later met the Brahmanas, and these Brahmanas asked, why, if you're so great, did this happen to you? And Haridas said, I heard too many offenses against the devotees of the Lord, and this is the just reaction. See his humility, see his tolerance. Very, very, very deep effect. I heard too many offenses. They came in my ear and they polluted my heart. I'm now is taken out from me. This is real tolerance. This is real humility. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur explains that when devotees deal with opposition while spreading Krishna consciousness, their spiritual body, which is called the Chit Sharira, spiritual body, becomes nourished by Chit Rakta, or spiritual blood. He goes on to say that devotees who continue to speak about Krishna, in spite of being misunderstood, neglected or opposed, become infused with this spiritual blood. I just read it in this very nice book of my godbrother Vaisheshika Prabhu. And I was thinking about it. In German, we say, du bist so blutlos. You are without blood. You suffer, but it's an expression that you don't have feelings. You don't really live a full life. You suffer from. You have to help me now with the right English word. Is it anemia?
Anemia.
In our spiritual life, we apparently can also become bloodless. We can suffer from spiritual anemia. That is when our enthusiasm leaves us, and we are drained of that energy. enthusiasm, when our determination leaves us, when our shraddha leaves us, then we become bloodless. And this, our chit-sarira, spiritual body, needs chit-rakta, or spiritual blood, meaning a life force in it, the force of shraddha. Mahatma Prabhu and myself have given a good number of Japa retreats together. We have always noted that devotees came to these retreats because they were hoping to get a spiritual infusion. They were hoping to get some chitrakta from their chit sharira. And this can happen during this exclusive focus on the holy name. And I joined today a little late. I was too late at our Gaura Hari's Japa circle, and I felt really this infusion was going on. Anyways, the main point here is forbearance, tolerance, and how to develop it. And I will make one point, and then I will ask Mahatma Prabhu to speak on this. The Bhagavatam glorifies devotees. Bhagavatam says, those devotees whose minds are absorbed in the personality of Godhead remain peaceful even when attacked by all sorts of dangers. And the Bhagavatam gives an analogy. Just like the mountain stays erect even when showers of rain drench it during the monsoon time. In the same way, a devotee has this mountain-like quality. He remains undisturbed even when so many oppositions come. Why is he undisturbed? Can you give any guess, a good guess, which comes from a mind which is alive with inspiration? What could protect a devotee to remain undisturbed even in the course of disturbances? Maybe you want to think about Haridas Thakur. How was it possible? He was whipped. I can guarantee you, any cane whip on the bad body is intolerable. It's intolerable. How could he? And he says, devotees are usually sensitive, no?
He had a shelter of Lord Krishna.
He had a shelter of Lord Krishna? Very good answer, thank you. What comes to mind? It's inconceivable, isn't it? I see your mind is blocked, you can't go there. But try.
Control of the senses?
Control of the senses?
He didn't identify himself
with the body.
He had faith.
He had faith in Krishna.
He was fully satisfied in his relationship with Krishna.
He was fully satisfied in his relationship with Krishna.
He was steady in Krishna consciousness.
He was steady in Krishna consciousness. You know? Yes, he was very steady. That is true. Yes. The Bhagavatam gives a very nice answer. I know it's very difficult when you have a speaker who already has an answer and he wants to say it just to engage you. He asks you for. And so the Bhagavatam says, taking shelter of me, these devotees engage constantly in hearing and chanting about me. The various kinds of material miseries do not affect them, because they are filled with thoughts of my pastimes and activities. This verse, I know Buddha Bhavana likes to write verses down and then study them. 3:25-23. If you are thinking of Krishna, if you are absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, then the material miseries which come your way don't affect you. Later, when Haridas Thakur met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called him forward and said, "Oh, Haridas, do you remember when you were flocked or whipped through the marketplaces? This was a very difficult situation for me. I wanted to come and kill the offenders with my chakra, but you were so tolerant, and you said, 'Oh Lord, please protect those who are now doing bad towards me.' And Haridas, I protected you." Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took down his chakra, he turned around and showed Haridas Thakur the very markings with which the cane whips had left on him, because he invisibly came and protected the body of Haridas Thakur and took the beatings upon himself. His beautiful golden body was marked with bleeding streams or streaks, and so on. And then the streaks disappeared, because the Lord has a spiritual body. But the idea is, when you are absorbed in Krishna, then the tolerance level is increasing to amazing degrees, because the Lord takes this away. You are all good-hearted devotees, so I won't shock you with graphic descriptions, but there is a vast body of literature there about the martyrs who were willing to even die when they were challenged in their faith. And it is described there that they were able to tolerate the instruments of torture which were applied to their body like no ordinary person could. And they had no experience they were not physically extremely muscular or so on, but they were absorbed in Krishna. And this is one of the things you can do to develop forbearance, to develop tolerance in the face of adversaries. You can take shelter in Krishna's lotus feet, and Krishna will protect you from the onslaught of various miseries. We in ISKCON have luxury miseries, you know. Some failure in good digestion, stream of insignificant politics which is there. It is insignificant. It is not very bad. Devotees are generally kind people. These are luxury problems. We are not attacked with glowing knives and so on and so forth. But even we sometimes shrink in the face of a little adversary, or we get cold feet on Sankirtan because it's winter and it's so cold and so on. If we learn to be a little bit more absorbed in Krishna, then this will not be there. I will end with I just heard from one devotee who came back from the Ukraine, where there is war. Ukraine, do we call it that?
Ukraine.
Where there is war. And she met devotees who were in constant threats, you know, when they would go over the streets, the bullets of snipers or kind of people were there. And the devotees who lived there, they felt very blissful. They had a lot of chanting and hearing. That's all they could do while the blitzkrieg raged around them. They had all kind, and they took shelter. And then this devotee met a phenomena. Other devotees who had left the war zone had returned from their places of comfort to be with these devotees and engage in more chanting and hearing. And the devotees, because they felt they are more blissful there than in comfort land. It is an experience of those who take shelter full-heartedness. Now, I'm not advocating that we empty the temple and all go into a war zone now and leave the deities unattended and so on to have a deep experience in Krishna consciousness. No, no. I'm advocating the point of taking shelter also in a comfortable zone. Some of us can't even tolerate the pangs of getting out of the bed at 4 o'clock in the morning. Too much austerity. That was for the, that's for the young people. And so on. Oh, yes, yes. We need
young people say it's for the old people.
Forbearance is necessary. Tolerance is necessary. It will wash your soul just like the mountains get washed and there is rain. It will purify you, these austerities, and with a purified heart it's easier to relish Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much. Here is, we will now get this microphone for
So Maharaj mentioned this morning he was going to be speaking about this topic. And one of the things that came to mind was how Mahaprabhu was saying, in order to chant, we have to be tolerant. And then one might say, well, I chant and I'm not tolerant. So what does that mean? I'm not a tolerant person and I've been chanting 16 rounds every day. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, another point that might confuse us in this regard, he said that tolerance is our greatest friend in the execution of our bhajan. So then we might wonder, well, how is being intolerant a problem in my bhajan? Well, maybe you could reflect on that and we can discuss it. I wanted to present one example. This came up in one of the courses I did. So we're asking devotees, this was a forgiveness course, we're asking devotees, how does resentment affect your spiritual life? So one devotee said, it ruins my japa. And I said, how is that? He said, because if I have resentment, or maybe it's just anger, or have an issue with someone, then I'll focus on that during my japa. Anyone have that experience?
Yeah.
I'll rephrase that. Anyone not have that experience? Sounds better than you have. And so we discussed that, and one of the interesting things we discussed is that often when that happens, if you have an issue with someone, it starts to infiltrate your japa. And the japa actually empowers you in a negative way. So that by the end of the japa, you're empowered to think you're right like 10 to 100 times more than when you started. Isn't that interesting? I'm right, Krishna, I mean, he's wrong. So wrong. Yeah, now that I have a chance 16 rounds, it's really clear how right I am and how wrong he is. So I think that's an excellent example of how intolerance has just ruined your 16 rounds completely. And as I was thinking about this, intolerance is not just intolerance as a generic problem, but it's accompanied by emotions. But when you're intolerant, what happens as a result of that? Maybe I hate you, maybe I curse you, maybe I hate myself because I'm not advanced and I can't tolerate myself. Maybe I don't like you because you're more advanced than I am, so I'm intolerant of you, and then I become envious of you. So intolerance can be the basis of so many other negative emotions. Another realization I had was actually a man who was very proud became intolerant waiting in a line. And in the middle of the line, he just dropped all his things. He actually had a meal he was going to eat, and it was taking long, and he got so frustrated, he left. And I can say this because I'm Jewish. He was Jewish, from New York, and very wealthy. And being raised Jewish with parents from New York and wealthy, I know sometimes they're intolerant because they feel they deserve to be. And it was a very clear demonstration of how intolerance is connected with pride. Another example I see in India, in Mayapur, during festival season, there are long, long, long lines that go into the free prasadam pavilion. I think it's the free prasadam pavilion. And so people are lined up maybe for an hour, and you know in India the sun's hot. And they're in the sun, and they're laughing, and they're joking. And I thought, I would always think, if this were America, there'd be a riot. And everyone in line would be laughing and joking and say, who's managing this? What's wrong with them? Why are they so stupid? We're out here in the sun. And so I think you see in India how tolerant people are. There's this sense of, I'm not that important to get upset. And there's this sense that I'm important enough to get upset. How dare you treat me that way? Don't you know who I am? Isn't it? So there's this amazing connection between intolerance and pride. That, you know, you want me to do that, you expect me to do that, you expect me to stand at the end of the line. Don't you know I was the number one student in my university? I've never been treated like this. So at least it's good to be aware of how intolerance can be a byproduct, and usually is a byproduct, of a lack of humility. I want to tell a story which illustrates another realization I had about tolerance. It's a fiction story of a little boy. He takes birth again, and he's welcomed by some angels, and they said, okay, now you've done it again, here you are, got another body. And this life is meant for learning. So as a divine being, you have so many qualities. You have qualities like tolerance, forgiveness, patience, honesty, etc., etc. These are all divine reflections of God. And in this life, you get to choose which quality you want to learn. So I thought about it and said, I'd like to learn forgiveness. So the angel said, okay, I'm going to die and come back as your enemy. And the little boy said, well, why would you come back as my enemy? He said, well, if you don't have an enemy, how are you going to learn to forgive? Because you have to have someone who harms you so you can learn how to forgive them. And so I always think, when someone is doing something, or I'm doing something to myself, or situations in the world are causing me or tempting me to be intolerant, I always think, okay, now I can learn how to be tolerant because there's something to tolerate. And if we think like that, and I like to think, Krishna's watching, he's going, okay, Mahatma, what are you going to do now? Mr. Tolerant, you know, let's see your stuff. We understand that sometimes Krishna puts us in situations because we need to learn something. I have a funny story. I was studying Bhagavad Gita in university, taught by devotees, and after maybe 6 weeks of study, I thought, I'm going to become a devotee. But the semester was 10 weeks. So after 10 weeks, I went back home and gave my parents the good news that I'm going to be wearing bed sheets and shaving my head. And you'll be especially happy that I'm dropping out of college. And they, of course, were thrilled. Practically died on the spot when I told them that. As happened to Maharaj, I was also very quickly taken off the will. So, which I think was a good thing. You know what? Off the will. You know, the will is when the inheritance.
Oh yeah, will. Yeah.
The will. I was taken off the will. So, actually, it was Krishna's arrangement because my father was in the fur business. That he made fur. You know, he got the skins and made fur.
Oh, so much better.
So I didn't have to accept that comment. I accepted that comment. But I had this one problem. I couldn't sleep when people snored. So I was like hesitating. You know, when am I going to move in the temple and are there people snoring? Because if they're snoring, I'm not going to be able to sleep. So finally, I got the courage and I moved in. Shaved my head. I actually had hair in those days, so I could get my head shaved. And then I thought, okay, all the devotees are sleeping in the Ramachari ashram, so I will go downstairs in the prasadam room, and I'll bring my sleeping bag, and nobody's there, and I have a good night's rest. So I lay down, getting ready, and all of a sudden, devotee comes down there, because he's supposed to sleep in front of the door, just in case there's a problem. And he lays down in about 1 nanosecond. I mean, seriously, you know, he would get Guinness Book of Records for sure. It was like incredible. And I'm sitting there, okay, so we understand that sometimes we need to learn something. And so Krishna sends what you need to learn. You need to learn how to tolerate something, so he sends you the thing. You
maybe
need.
He was an angel. An angel of snoring.
So I tell this to all the men and the wives that sometimes when they become intolerant with their husbands or wives, you should think this is a blessing from Krishna, teaching you how to become tolerant. And I made a joke at a wedding. I said that it's really hard to be a sannyasi and be humble because you don't have a husband or wife to help you become humble. You just go home in a room by yourself and there's no one to say, Maharaj, why did you say that in class? But when you're married, you come home and you have a wife or husband who'll say, why did you say that in class? So, and we think, thank you. Because Krishna, you're sending me someone who's teaching me how I can become more tolerant or humble. Not just a husband or wife, but a boss or a friend or anyone. And Srila Bhakti said, that just, no offense to my wife. She didn't say, why did you say that? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, when someone criticizes you, you should think, rather than how dare you say that, you have the same problem, who do you think you are, etc. Even if you don't say that, you might feel that. He said, you should think, Krishna has just sent me someone to make me more humble than a blade of grass. And then he said, if somebody praises you, you should think this person is telling you the qualities that you should develop. Yes.
Okay.
No, actually, I'm at the end. But I just wanted to ask you how you, and also ask you, Marsh, how do you see this connection between tolerance and chanting? Because as I was saying before, it seems like sometimes we can be intolerant in chant. So what did Mahaprabhu mean? And what did Srila Bhaktisiddhanta mean? That tolerance is our greatest friend in bhajan. I mean, we can understand that in some ways, but how do we understand it in a broader sense? That how it's so important to be able to chant properly, to be tolerant.
Thank you very much for all such insight for the points. I really appreciate it. Well, I would answer in a similar way as this devotee answered. When you are not tolerant, you are always thinking of that thing or that person who disturbed you. If you do the bhajan, you can continue with the bhajan, you chant, but the chanting is the background music, and in the foreground is I'm right, like you said, or my pain, or the bad weather, or this didn't work, and so on. It's a background music. The chanting is only background music, and it will not really affect your heart so much, because the heart is engaged with material things or material thoughts, and the chanting melody will just not penetrate such a hard heart. It will just somehow go to the side, and not do any so much good for you. It is one of the 10 offenses to remain attached to material things, and these offenses block the result of chanting. It may not be like a real, like dark offense, and so on, but you have to decide when you chant. Will I put my pot in this way that the rain of mercy can come? Or do I put my pot in this way, and then the rain of mercy will glide off?
We had a question today in the Java class about chanting and praying for something material, a circumstance, a difficulty. And when you were saying this, then I was realizing that happens so often. I'm in a difficult circumstance, and I sacrifice my job and my prayer for purity, for prayer to solve a material situation. And I think it's very common because I'm not tolerating that or accepting. But like what you were asking about Haridas Thakur, how did you do that? One thought I had was acceptance, that this is Krishna's will. So as soon as you accept something as Krishna's will, it's easy to tolerate. When you don't accept it as Krishna's will, you go crazy. And a lot of time in my counseling, I see that there's one answer that's kind of like a panacea for most problems, is just accept. This is happening now. The whole universe has converged. Every star in the sky is making this happen. And there's absolutely nothing you can do to change it, but you're not accepting it and driving yourself completely insane. So I think that's an important part, an aspect of tolerance, is being able to accept things which we can't control at that particular point.
I was pleased. It's a really. And we have one. We have one surprise today. We have a devotee here who has come from South Africa, Hare Krishna, and who will dance for the pleasure of the devotees. Where should he dance? Maybe.